Because when you're sick, you get this awesome lower registry, which is great for speaking, but very bad for talking for a very long time. I want to start off today by thinking about this question about what is the treasure that you're seeking in your life? Now, treasure is whatever you find of great worth or value, and it's something rare or precious to you. We often think of treasure as just precious metals or like jewels or cash, kind of like this picture here. But there often can be more than just that kind of treasure, right? We might treasure being honored, or we might treasure being respected. And maybe you treasure being loved by many. But I really want you to think about this question today as I think Jesus is looking to address this question today about this idea of treasure. And I think the question he's asking is, what things do you treasure? You know, what is it that you desire? What is it that you're looking for in this life? A couple of years ago, I ended up playing a game I hadn't played in years, and the game was called The Game of Life by Hasbro. And I must be a masochist because I remember how much, when I play this game, I suffer so much. If you've ever played this game, it's not fun. To put it very simply, it's not a fun game. The reason being is because there's all these different things that are happening in the game. So just to kind of give you a quick run through what the game is like, or some of the problems. Number one is that it's a 90s board game. One of the problems with that, it's very clunky, right? It has that very clunky 90s feel. Number two is that every action card is bad for you, right? I don't think I've ever drawn a card. Maybe I've drawn a couple cards, but most of the cards are bad for you, right? So it's not really action, it's failure cards, right? But I think why I'm talking about this game today is not so much that I'm interested in the gameplay, but the game itself. In the game, you progress through life by reaching life achievements, and as you play, you want to accumulate as much money as possible. And ultimately, at the end of the game, you retire, and whoever has the most money at the end of the game wins the game. Now, I tell you this because I'm wondering how many of us today see our lives just like this game. That the goal of our lives is dedicated to reaching all the normal life milestones and trying to earn as much money as possible, and then finally die and retire in some kind of mansion at the end of your life. Now, your goals so some of you might say that your goals are not exactly like this, right? That they're different than this, but I want you to ask yourselves this. If you were to make a game about your life, what would it play like? What would be the goals in your life in this game? And how would you score the game? And would you say afterwards, after you've lived a life like this, the way you kind of made it in the game, would you call it satisfying? And would it be worth it? So these are some of the questions I want you to think about. So I want you to think about this idea. If you were to create a life about your game, how would that game look like? What would be the end goal? So when you reach the end, what would it be like? What are the achievements in this game? And how do you score at the end? Now, let's go look at the passage today. Before we look at the passage today, I just want to quickly recap what we've talked about so far. So we've been working through this section called the Sermon on the Mount, which spans between Matthew 7 and chapter 5 through chapter 7. And a couple of weeks ago, we finished the first section of chapter 6, which Jesus handles three religious duties that believers practice regularly. And he deals with the right way that believers are to do these things, the right way to give, the right way to pray, the right way to fast. And the right way is not to go after earthly things, such as the praise of men, but to look to the rewards that God offers. In these verses that we'll be touching on today, Jesus will be discussing further about these rewards that he's talked about in chapter 6. So Jesus begins by saying in chapter 6, verse 19, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal." Now, the first thing I want to deal with is this idea of the question, is Jesus against the idea of wealth or of money having some kind of possession? And I don't think that Jesus is against that. We often read, especially in the Old Testament, this idea that, I'll give you a couple examples here. So Proverbs 10, verse 4, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. Proverbs 13, verse 11, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Right, so there seems like this concept in the Old Testament that wealth is okay, right? So it's not the idea of wealth that Jesus is against here. But I think what Jesus is against as we look at this passage here in verse 19 is, number one, he's against stockpiling and hoarding. Number two, the second thing that Jesus is against is when we make earthly things more important than they should be, or when we overvalue our wealth. Here, Jesus gives us the first reason why we shouldn't hoard or why we shouldn't overvalue, and the reason he gives us is because it doesn't last, right? It has no lasting power. Treasures on earth can be destroyed by moth and rust and stolen by thieves, and what it really shows us here is that treasures will and can fade away one day. Now, this isn't just tied to this idea of physical wealth, right? Much things that we can desire or treasure, such as honor and respect to, can rust away or can be stolen. Think about the idea of respect, right? Respect comes and goes. Honor comes and goes. These things, too, are fleeting, and they're here for a little bit, and they're gone tomorrow. Now, here Jesus brings us to this other question about when you desire these things and when you have them, do they actually have lasting impact? Right, so we think about our bank accounts, and we all know, since many of you are parents and you own homes, there's clearly like a rise and fall in your bank account every month, right? Like mortgage gets paid out, bills get paid out, then you get paid, and so there's always this rise and fall. And so there doesn't seem to be a stableness, in some senses, to our money. And ultimately, the question becomes, at the end of our lives, what will all that money do? Canadians are quite familiar with this idea of snow and all the amazing things that you can do with snow. We can build great forts and structures. We can mold people out of snow. We can cage people in snow. Kids can wage wars with other kids over snow and snow accessories. You can sketch pictures in snow. You can eat snow as long as it's white. And snow can be quite pleasurable when it is here. But when the sun comes up and when it gets a tiny bit hotter, all that you've built, all that you've fought over, all that you've created, it's gone forever. Snow, like the things on this earth, are fleeting. And they're here for a short while and then they're gone. Is this a description of your life's quest? Friends, are you questing over treasures that will be here today but gone tomorrow? This sets up Jesus' next point, that what you actually should seek are heavenly treasures, because these are things that will last for an eternity. If you're looking for real and true blue-chip treasures, something that will stand the test of time, you should put all of your effort in investing in heavenly treasures. Now, at this point in time, you might be asking, you know, what are these treasures that Jesus is talking about? What are these treasures that he's telling us that we need to have? In the broad sense, when we talk about treasures, what we're talking about is what a Christian's treasure is this entire inheritance that he will receive at the final salvation. And these are all laid up in the idea of Christ. We believe that as Christians, we believe that all people have sinned before an all-sovereign, all-good God, that in our own power, we could never make things right with him because we could never do anything good. However, God is the one who stoops to our level and makes a way for us to be reconciled to him. He sent his son, Jesus, to live a perfect life that I could not live, to die the perfect death that my sins deserve. And now he calls every person to do the thing that they were meant to do, that is to acknowledge our sin against him, believing in his son and the work he has done for me personally, and to trust and to love him joyfully forever. We believe that one day that God will judge the entire world and he'll hold the whole world accountable, and the only way to escape his wrath, because he's judging all of us for our works, is by way of his mercy. And where it's amazing when we talk about these treasures is these treasures are all tied into this idea of the gospel, this idea of Christ, because what we gain or what we find treasure in is Christ and all the benefits that come with him. For Christians, we will inherit these treasures that have been waiting for us. We will be like him. We will see him as he is, as 1 John chapter 3, verse 2 says. We will be home and at rest from this world. And in my opinion, I also think that we will receive different rewards, and what these rewards will look like is different capacities and responsibilities, capacities for understanding and experiencing God in this new earth, and responsibilities on this earth that are given to us based on our faithfulness, based on our lives now. Right? These are treasures, right? These are things that we should actually love. Now, when I say treasures, many Christians think of these things as just, these are things. Right? There's no emotion tied to them. There's no love of these things. Right? But how can that be treasure? Right? Treasure is something that you, meaning not just me or just some of the people in this church, but you yourselves say that I desire these things. I think they're valuable. I think they are worthy to possess. For you to say that you treasure them means that with all your heart, these are things that you want, that you're willing to give up for, that you're willing to sacrifice for. Now, these treasures are so amazing that Paul says in Romans chapter 8, verses 18 to 19, he says, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God." Right? So this idea that there are treasures waiting for us, not just that there are rewards, but there are an inheritance to us, should give us great joy and hope and really just make us alive. So these are the treasures that we're talking about. We're talking about the Christian treasures that will be inherited in the final salvation. You know, I find sometimes when we talk about treasures in the Christian life, maybe not in this crowd, but sometimes in other crowds, people roll their eyes, right? Here this person goes again talking about something that's not true. And people may say that I'm making something so simple like salvation into something so complicated. But look at the scriptures. When you read them, there is this life and this power that comes from them. I can compare the Christian life much to people who play this idea of the violin, right? If you think about a violin, it's very simple. It's a piece of wood and it has four strings, maybe more than four strings, but it tends to have four strings. It's a very simple instrument. But the sound that it makes, right, the power and the complexity, right, and the depth. Right, you could compare the Christian life for people who live the Christian lives to violinists who understand, who know how to play. And sometimes when people play, it could sound like when children take a violin and knock it against, you know, the floor. And if your Christian life looks like that, I can understand why people might think that the Christian life is not interesting, right? Because it doesn't make a good sound, right? In fact, we've all heard violins, or we've heard vocalists or other instruments out of tune, right? And it's screeching and it's horrible to hear, right? These are sounds of the Christian life that we don't want to hear, but there are people that who have lived and dedicated their entire lives to Christ. And the sound that they make is simply amazing. There's a depth of color in it. There's powerful sounds. There's power in their lives. And the simple dedication to their life is inspiring. So is the Christian faith simple? Yes, it's simple. But within the idea of the Christian faith, there's layers and layers of beauty for every level of believer to unearth. Now, when we ask about the question about how do we store up, then this passage talks about that we need to be storing up treasures in heaven. What does it mean by that? And I think we need to look to a passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 to 19, where it says, "As for the rich in this present age, which is probably all of us here, charge them to not be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the certainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasures for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life." Now, before we get into any, we go any further, I just want to make very clear here that we're not talking about one-to-one. So for every good deed that I do, I get one treasure in heaven. It doesn't work like that. Unlike the game of life where if you do one good thing or you move one space, you get money, it doesn't work like that. But all of these treasures, all this inheritance that we'll be receiving that we spoke about earlier is more than enough compensation for the trials and tribulations and all the giving that we'll be doing in this life. But in this passage in 1 Timothy chapter 6, it talks about for those of us who are looking to really invest in heavenly things, the goal to do that is, number one, good works, which are very clear. But the second thing is something maybe we don't think a ton about, the idea of being generous, right? This idea of being ready to share. When you think about your wealth, what ultimate goal does it serve? You know, I've also find it very funny that oftentimes we talk about wealth as treasure, right? Because what does it actually do in itself? Why is it called treasure? Right? The idea of money and wealth is it gets you something that you like, that you want. But in itself, it's really nothing. So what is it that you want? What is it that it's here to achieve? You know, many of us here, as we probably talked about, are fairly well off, especially compared to the rest of the world. My question to you is this: why has God blessed us with all of this wealth? What purpose does it serve? And I think if we look biblically, it seems very clear that we should be seeing these treasures, these earthly things that we've received from God, as tools to advance the kingdom of God. And I hope you heard that right, that they are tools to advance the kingdom of God and not to advance our own agendas personally. Now this matters, right? This is the difference between storing up in heaven and storing up on earth. Because the way that you see your treasure, the way that you see your wealth, the way that you see your possessions says everything. And it's so clear in verse 21 when it says this, "For where your treasure is, there your heart also will be." When the Bible talks about the heart, it doesn't quite mean what it means today for most of us. When it says the heart, it means the core part of the person. It talks about this idea that it means the core character or core being of somebody. In fact, when we talk about the heart, we're talking about you, who you essentially are, who your character is. And when Jesus says that your treasure, where your treasure is, it tells you everything that you need to know about yourself. You know, this passage talks about this idea that we find things valuable and precious. And the reason why they're treasures and the reason that we value them is because we see that there's something of worth in them. We see that there's something in it that we know that if we give up something, it's worth it. And so therefore, if you see a treasure, you're willing to sacrifice for it, you're willing to put all your energy into it, you're willing to pay out for it if the value is worth it. How many people here have gone to a garage sale and seeing something on sale that you know is worth way more than you're going to pay for it? It happens all the time. And we're willing to pay whatever the amount is because we know that the value we're getting out of it afterwards exceeds what we paid for it. In the same way, when we talk about the treasures in heaven, this is why we buy in. This is why we invest. This is why we store up. Because we can see and we know that these treasures that we receive are worth so much more than what we're giving in. But is that where your treasure is? When you think about your life's energy, your life's purpose, your life goals, all of your wealth, possessions, are those the things that you treasure? Or do those treasures do something else? Do they meet something else? Do they do something else? Do they get you to the actual treasure? Moving on here, verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Now, this passage is a little bit complicated, but the idea here is that or what I think it's saying is that if the eye directs the body, and if your eyes are good or healthy, then you'll be full of light. However, if your eyes are bad and not well directed, then it'll be filled with great darkness. Now, if this is right, then Jesus is giving us a second reason to not hoard or to overvalue our earthly treasures, because going after earthly wealth corrupts, but going after heavenly wealth purifies. One second. If you've dedicated your life to wealth, or for that matter, anything other than God, you're always going to be forced to make concessions or compromises in favor of gaining more wealth. Sometimes the pursuit of wealth or prestige doesn't just become a one-time problem. It becomes an every day of every hour of every second problem. Because you're always asking yourself, you know, should I, you know, buy in to doing more of these things that are going to build my wealth? Or should I continue to buy in or do things that God is calling me to do? And if your choices continue to push one way, at some point in your life, God is going to be pushed out. But if we dedicate ourselves to the pursuit of God, this is different. It changes everything. It puts everything in its right order. And ultimately, I think it leads to a more restful and joyful experience of life. Now, an interesting point here about this section here is that there's a wordplay that's kind of missed out in the English, that when it says healthy and bad, it's supposed to be this idea, it's supposed to be a wordplay, but it's not a really good example. It's not a really good, it doesn't really express what it's actually trying to show here. When it talks about this idea of healthy, another way to look at it is generous. And when it talks about bad, it actually looks at this idea of being selfish or greedy. And so one way to look at this is that what it leads us to see is that those with healthy eyes who are full of light will be generous people, and that those who have bad eyes will be full of darkness, are stingy, selfish, and greedy. Right, so it goes back to this idea of what are you doing with your treasures, right? And do you recognize their usage of the kingdom of God to be generous to the people around you, to aid the people around you, and not to just hoard? This dedication to a life of wealth leads naturally to verse 24 here, where it says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Jesus' third reason is that if you commit yourself to money and dedicate yourself to life and pursuit of wealth, it will have mastery over you. And then you will no longer be serving God. I think for Christians, that should be a scary thing. Right? The idea of not being able to serve God, not to be in his presence, not to be in him or with the relationship, these should be scary things for us. And maybe this is why it's so interesting that God tells us to be generous, because it allows us to part with our money, allows us to give it up. Right, so that we can understand that our entire life is not just about accumulating wealth. But there's something much deeper here in this entire passage. Right, this idea of being a slave to either wealth or just being a slave to God, or this idea of what it said is a happy life. There's a connotation here, or there's a meaning here, that it's a life completely and utterly devoted to God. And that this life will not share in any way therefore, if you have devoted to other things, you ultimately have to make a choice, because your life can only fit one devotion. And if it's a devotion to God, then you can't have a devotion to other things. It could be, if it's not God, it could be a ton of other things, right? You can be devoted to a ton of other things. But God requires, if you are devoted to God, you can only be devoted to this one thing. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't go to work. That doesn't mean you should take care of your family. But everything is understood within the concept and understanding of your devotion to God. Anything outside of that is devotion to something else. Now, I've given you today two representations of what people are after in this life. And I've said that the earthly things, if you pursue these things, will perish. And I've talked about this idea that if you are going after heavenly things, these things will endure forever. I want to kind of leave you with two questions and we'll move on to the conclusion here. Number one is, which of these two roads best describes you? And have you been born again to a living hope? You know, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3 to 9 says this, Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to his great mercy. He has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes through, though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. A little too on the register, too low on the registry there. Does this description that Paul gives, or sorry, that Peter gives here, is that a description of you? Is this where your treasure lies? That your hope is living and it's active and it's real? That you're putting all of your stock, everything that you have, into this treasure? Does this describe you? Number two, I want you to recognize that focusing on heavenly rewards is not an easy thing. In fact, it's very hard. We live in a materialistic world. We have neighbors, family, coworkers who are focused on their materialism. And everything in our world lures us to focus on earthly rewards. And it's hard, right? When you talk with your friends, when you talk with your coworkers or family, they want to talk about materialism. They want to talk about their things. It's hard to separate ourselves because we're working so closely with them. But here's my second question then, and it's tied to the first. Do you see yourself as different from them in your pursuit? Are your intentions otherworldly in comparison? When you look at the things that your coworkers and family and friends want, are they the same things that you want? And is it the same way that you pursue those things? Because if it is, something might be very wrong. Randy Alcorn, in his book called The Treasure Principle, says this: I'm convinced that the greatest deterrent to giving is this, the illusion that earth is our home. As you talk about this idea that that we are to be storing up treasures, there's definitely this understanding that we should be giving and we should be sharing what we have. And Randy Alcorn makes a great statement here that the reason why we often do not share, what we don't give up, is because we think that all of our treasures are linked to this earth, and this is where we belong. But let me remind you, if you're a Christian today, that this is not your home, that you have a living hope in heaven that is waiting for you, and that one day you will inherit in full, and God will pay in full. And God has paid in full. But what are you doing now with your time? What are you doing now with these earthly things? Who do they serve? Let's move on to the conclusion here. I asked earlier about this question about if you made a game of your life, and what would it show? at the end of it, would Christ be at the end of the game? Would he be your great reward? And these milestones that people have in their lives, these normal milestones that people have, are they inconsequential? Do they matter? Secondly, laying up treasure in heaven happens only in a life fully devoted to God. This passage makes eminently clear that anyone who says that they are devoted to God has no other pursuits in their life. They cannot pursue anything within themselves. Everything must be a pursuit within God himself. This is the only way that we can lay up treasure in heaven. So is your life a devotion and dedicated to God alone? And do you understand all the things happening in your life, all the treasures, all the wealth in your life in pursuit of him? Number three, for Christians, earth is not your home. Therefore, it's okay to give. It's okay to not lay up and to hoard stacks of treasures in your home that one day may fall on you and kill you. And if earth is not your home, then you can let go of these things because there's something better for you. You could see money as tools to achieve an end, but what is that end that you're trying to achieve? Is God your true treasure? Or is the wealth that you own, is that really what you're after in this life? Very lastly, I leave you with a reflection question. You know, what is the great treasure that you're after in your life? And does your current lifestyle reflect that that is what you want?